So I'm here today to talk about EPI-1.0, a GI case study. My name is Elizabeth Musser, and I'm a graduate research assistant at Virginia Bioinformatics Institute. And this project was done in a collaboration with many other people in my lab, including James Shillett, Harshal Hegdegar, Alex Talianos, Meredith Wilson, Caitlin Rivers, and Dr. Brian Lewis, and Dr. Stephen Eubank. I have no relationships to disclose, but I would like to note that this work was supported by the NIH MIDAS grant. We had six primary motivations when going into EPI-DASH design. The first was to provide useful epidemiological context for incidence of GI illness within a community, foster awareness of GI illness occurrence within a community, and aid in outbreak detection, supplement and complement conventional surveillance systems with social media and social networking data, detect trends signaling changes in the incidence and prevalence of GI syndrome illness within a health district, and provide estimates of the magnitude and morbidity of syndrome illness, and contribute significantly to the field of epidemiologic research directly correlated with the control and prevalence of GI syndrome illness. So syndromic surveillance is also known as population level scanning. And the primary goal is to detect changes in the population. And this is in contrast with active surveillance, which is at the individual level. Syndromic surveillance currently consists of lab reports, pharmacy prescription data, and doctor's visits that are visualized through BioSense and Essence. The problem with this is that this data is limited in scope. It's also often missing data, and there is a delay in outbreak identification, and this kind of accumulates into limited health situational awareness. So in the design of EPI-DASH, we looked at the CDC framework for evaluating public health surveillance systems, particularly because we were looking at the integration of this of these systems in the local public health departments. We looked at TASC, especially describe the system experience. So the framework for which we built EPI-DASH on looked at system usefulness, flexibility of the system acceptability by the local epidemiologist, the portability of the system, which this proves to be a very key point that I'll talk about later on, system stability and the system cost to maintain this system in the health department. This is the case definition that we used for our system. So I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about the field epidemiologist. The true challenge for these tools lies in the successful integration of these tools in the health department. And within the context of the public health department, these challenges are numerous. Numerous tools such as this have been developed for a while, but these tools have very little feedback, formal evaluation, or long-term usage. And kind of the key point that we wanted to drive home throughout the duration of the study is that these tools should be evaluated within a well-developed framework of procedures and support designed to assist in the epidemiologic analysis, interpretation, and investigation in response to a system signal. I just pushed. There we go. Okay, so this is kind of the overview of the idea of our surveillance system. One of the things that I wanted to bring up in this slide is that we didn't use a tweet in terms of an equivalent to an actual case of GI illness. Instead, we looked at tweets as a human sensor network to make inferences about the prevalence of GI activity. So you see here where S is the data incoming to the dashboard from the social network. P is the inference that we're making about the current prevalence of GI activity. And this was especially important when we worked in the state of Virginia, and especially in rural areas in Virginia. This could be very important. You often see people tweeting about other people being ill. So again, we don't look at tweets as actual incidences to compare to, but rather as a human sensor network. So I'm going to talk a little bit about data collection. We used a tool that was developed in correlation with EPI-DASH. It's called ChatterGrabber, and it's a search method based off of a social media data miner that was developed in Python. It has a Google Docs interface, which is very useful for our field EPIs, they're able to go in and interact with the back end of our system. It's a great alternative to the free 1% streaming. There's no limits on queries, so we're able to get up to 100% streaming sample of the Twitter data, and this data is sent nightly to the dashboard. There's two different search methods. The pure query-based method was a search method that we started with, and that's based off conditions, qualifiers, and exclusions. And then we moved on to the NLTK toolkit classifier, which is a naive Bayesian classifier. And this classifier just discards tweets that don't fit in our desired categories. Here's a word flow map that describes the tweet linguistic classification. And then to describe how the tweets were classified, I'm going to give a few examples. We have three categories that tweets were classified in. So just threw up, hashtag TGIF, hashtag yellow, hashtag never drinking again. And you can see there, no suspicion of infectious illness. So that would be a category one tweet, which we is just, it's trash, it's garbage, it's background noise. My son just threw up. So this would be a category three tweet, suspicion of infectious illness and GI illness. And then if you look at the bottom, oh God, I feel so sick. That would return a category two tweet, which is a suspicion of infectious illness, but the type is unknown because we can't denote that there's anything in relation to GI in that tweet. So those were the three categories that we classified in. And the category three tweets were the tweets that we kept and sent into the dashboard. So the first part of this study was kind of our training time, and that was done between January and May. And this is when we trained our NLTK set. We started with about 74% accuracy and moved up to about 86% accuracy. And these were cross-validated with our 2,000 tweet training set. And this just shows a relation with infectious GI illness tweets, which is those category 3 tweets with the category 2 tweets. So moving into the dashboard, the dashboard development, these were 5 key points that we wanted to look at. Timeliness of data input, the reporting structure of our dashboard, timeliness of detection, the thresholds for signal generation. We didn't want to cause undue panic and the trigger for dissemination and analysis. EpiDash 1.0 was developed using Ruby on Rails, which is an open source web framework. The model talks to the database, and the view talks to the browser, and the controller coordinates between the model and the view. This is our first section in the dashboard. It's known as the first look section. It is designed to be an indicator of overall syndrome activity with epidemiologists' time efficiency in mind. When talking to epidemiologists, their time is very short, and they just need something quick that they can look at and say, hey, I need to spend more time with this dashboard, or I can go ahead and move on to the other portions of my work. So the first look section, the signal processing is very simple. We had three variables that we wanted to account for. C being the constant level of disease activity, D being day of week variation, and then S being the seasonal variation. So with that in mind, we looked at standard deviation scales. So for a Monday, we would average the previous 5 Mondays, and we would get the mean from that. And if the current day's value is no more than one standard deviation from those previous 5 Mondays, then the stoplight would be green. If it's between 1 and 2, it would be yellow. If it's more than 2, it would be red. And so going into day of week variation, the reason why we did this is we had filters for intoxication, but there's still an influx on Saturday and Sunday as a result of intoxication. So the second section is the time series analysis. This can be customized by day of the week. It's really good for trending and pattern analysis utility, and we can change it to overlay week by week. So you can put up various weeks and overlay them against each other. Also day of the week, so looking at like Mondays and Tuesdays. So again, it's very good for seasonal trending identification. Also, if you click on the green button, it'll give you the top keywords for that particular day that are in the tweet decks. The second component is a GIS map, which is an annotated detection map. You can zoom in to individual health districts. The geolocated tweets appear with a red marker with box content and a timestamp ID. And we're currently in the process of integrating cluster analytics into our GIS component. And this would be really useful for the identification of hotspots for illness, for example, eating establishments, so kind of those repeat offenders for illness, venues, and events. And this is some of our work for that this fall. These are the EBI-related tweets in Virginia. And then here's the clusters. And the final section is the word cloud section. It provides linguistical patterns to provide swift insight into tweet text context. You can click on any given word, and it gives you the full tweet text and also shows you the correlation value to other words in the word cloud, which could also be really important from a connection standpoint. And then this section is a searchable keyword matching and a raw data section. And this is really important for key value pairs, so looking at words that are constantly appearing together in our tweet text, as well as linguistical pattern recognition and matching. And this is what the EPI-Dash tool looks like in totality. So before we deployed in the summer, we created a pre-surveillance intake assessment. And we distributed it to the Virginia Department of Health state epidemiologists. And these were some key points that were drawn out of that. Field epidemiologists spent an average of 79 hours per week doing syndromic surveillance. They said that they were knowledgeable but with limited technical skills. On a scale from 1 to 10, syndromic surveillance was described as a 10 or highly pertinent. They estimated that they would interact with our system 3 to 5 times per week. These were things that we really focused in on. These were things that were cited as the most frequent reasons as these surveillance systems had failed to integrate in standard surveillance protocol. And that was difficulty of usage, system portability, and lack of data completeness. And then this last point was very encouraging. They all said that they already use social media as a critical part of their syndromic surveillance. They're already on Facebook, they're already on Twitter, and what we wanted to do was not replace traditional syndromic systems, but rather kind of streamline stuff that the epidemiologists are already doing in their day-to-day work, kind of make it easier for them. During the time in our fall, this was our deployment activity for EPI-Dash. And then this is just a histogram of EPI-Dash daily values. We achieved 86% accuracy, and all the tweets incoming in our system were cross-validated with our training set. So again, one of the things that we really wanted to focus on was this successful integration for these field EPIs. So I created this listing of tools here throughout the fall for the epidemiologists to use. These include a dashboard user guide, dashboard guided tutorial trainings, interactive case study-based workshop for how the dashboard could be useful for them, network collaboration capabilities with other state epidemiologists utilizing the dashboard, interactive feedback and response opportunities, and then I also set up a protocol for refinement of the dashboard. Quantitative evaluation. We looked at BioSense. And this data has been normalized, and the EPI-Dash values are delayed by 24 hours. So clues from BioSense, things that we're seeing that people complain about being sick before they go to the doctor. So people will oftentimes tweet or put a statement on social media before they actually go to their physician. And two, EpiDash is by no means meant to be a replacement. Again, it's just to kind of streamline things that field epidemiologists are already doing and maybe provide a little bit more context for where things might be happening, what eating establishes, what eating establishments might be causing problems, things like that. We generate weekly reports also looking at the VDH enteric disease data and health map data to see if that can provide any clues as to how to better refine EpiDash. So we're in the deployment stage now, and we'll be going into the evaluation stage. We have a pretty formal evaluation set up that looks at data quality, level of health, situational awareness, both prior to using EpiDash and after using EpiDash, the utility of the system for the epidemiologist, timeliness of the data, system stability, the portability, smartphone usage was cited as a very key thing here, user flow time percentage. So how are they navigating through our dashboard? Are they starting here and moving here? What are they doing in each section, and what are they using each section for? So for the detection versus investigation. So are they finding out that something's happening, and then they're getting on EpiDash to try to figure out where it's happening or in what population it's happening in, or are they using EpiDash more for the detection of illness in their communities? And then kind of more on that, we did a sectional evaluation for each section. And that really gets into the language and cultural conventions of the system. Does the section encourage efficiency and the technical configuration and accessibility of the sections? Points of further discussion. So we'll be entering into the formal evaluation stage, and then we'll be tailoring it based off of the responses that we get. We've had a significant request from emergency and urgent care facilities throughout Virginia for the use of EpiDash in the ERs, as well as school nurses have expressed interest in using EpiDash. We're looking at the inclusion of broader media feeds to include local online news, online newspapers, and Facebook. We wanted to continue to foster awareness of the ESCOL issues surrounding social media data collection and social media research, and mostly in relation to privacy. And then these last two, really looking at building a supportive infrastructure for surveillance system integration, particularly complementary surveillance system integration in the state health departments. And then these are things that we have chatter grabbers set up for that we are awaiting to deploy in EpiDash. So public emergency tracker, looking at fire, weather, and crime, a firearms and a violence, vaccine sentiment, tick-borne diseases, and Ebola sentiment. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for your presentations. That was very interesting. As I said at the beginning, very diverse, four very, very different presentations in different populations. We're open for questions now. We have about 15 minutes for questions. Go ahead.
This is a question for Laura. You mentioned providing technical assistance to your dashboard users. I'm wondering how you determined you needed that assistance and what that assistance
looked like. Sure. So we work with not just providers who are on that particular EHR, but about 30 different vendors in New York City. And the primary assistance before the regional extension centers ended, went to providers who were signed up for that regional extension center and who were striving to, who had implemented EHRs and were striving to achieve meaningful use. So that's kind of the first level. And this year we have an initiative looking at specifically the A and the C and the S, the diabetes and the cholesterol control and the smoking. And so we're focusing our outreach on small practices who don't have their own QA and technical assistance research. And we're doing a staggered evaluation of those who get our technical assistance this year versus next year, and comparing those two groups all across those three measures.
So it's not just on the basic use of
It evolves as they evolve on the EHR. Now it's more about clinical quality of care in the main areas that New York City is concerned about. Okay. Yeah.
One question for you, and then another question for both of you, I guess.
Okay.
So first of all, I would love to know how you convinced. Yours from the public health department.
Yeah, that's right.
How you convinced the clinicians to allow you to have access to that data. Number one, and number two, this my second question. Then is I'm wondering how I come from a metropolitan planning organization, and I can see already where you all are, where the health department and the clinicians in the community are using this to improve quality and to really understand kind of what's going on with, you know, internally with the patients in the hospitals or in the clinics, and kind of where they need to go and what sort of the issues are. Our challenge has been is to try to not only get access to the data, but also to be able to use the data and try to figure out how to map that data geographically so we can actually see where these people are coming from in the community so that we can target resources actually in the community rather than just in clinics and hospitals.
So to your first question of why providers agreed to share data, I think there's a few things that really help with our system. One is that we're giving a lot of their own data back to them, and that's the primary use, and they see the real benefit from that, and it's very tangible. Second, you know, concerns about PHI are always raised, and the fact that we're set up to receive aggregate counts and no patient line level data was really reassuring to them. And then the fact that they just have a relationship to them where we are helping them use their EHR, adopt their EHR, that makes them much more willing to have that as part of the bundle of services that they're sharing data with us. And if someone else wants to take the second question.
In Wisconsin, 90% of our providers report their data to the WCHQ, and the reason they do that is they wanted to voluntarily report as opposed to waiting until it was done to them, and they created the system, and they actually, the purpose is for improvement, and they really saw that, so they really believe that, and all the providers in the state really kind of believe that transparency will improve the care. Regarding the mapping of data, that's an interesting thing. We did take our data and tried to map it. We're restricted at how low we can go with the mapping ability. By law, we can only go to the census group level. So you can't get to a block, or you can't get to a smaller neighborhood where some of the things that an MPO might want to map are better at a lower level. But I know some places in Minnesota and Wisconsin are looking at potentially sharing data across systems. It would certainly require a third party to be involved, I think, in the sharing of that kind of information and then mapping it. Questions?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Just to actually respond to that, which is that there are also folks who are developing hashing algorithms to be able to create point maps and be able to do heat maps, but they jitter the point before the public health entity ever actually can see it. So you get around the issues of potential breaches of confidentiality, but you still get a map that either allows you to look at an outbreak that's very spatially located, you need something smaller in a zip code or a census block, or if you're a CBO, an area that you want to attack a particular block, group, or whatever. I don't know as much about it, but if you look up Academy Health, they have an electronic data methods forum that has people working on something in that area. Might be helpful.
I have two questions. One for Elizabeth. When that tweet goes out, is it being geocoded to the tweet location or to the address area of the where the phone works?
So it's wherever that person is at the given time.
Okay. So there could be. And then, Laura, are you part of the New York City Macroscope?
The Macroscope?
Yeah.
Remily Newton-Dane, who answered the last question, is part of that. But this is the data source I talked about is the one that's collecting the data for the New York City Macroscope, which is a project to validate our data and see what EHR measures are can we expand to the population level, or at least the care-seeking population, and can we use this data source to make claims about New York City as a whole?
This is a simple question. Is Chatter ever bilingual?
It is currently English. There has been a significant interest in the Spanish development.
But it's not there yet.
Yeah, for Elizabeth, for the tweets, does it only capture public tweets, or do you have the ability to capture someone's private tweets?
So we get 100% of the streaming sample. It doesn't violate the privacy of someone who has locked their Twitter down to be private. However, the majority of Twitter accounts are public.
So you were mentioning that you're building in a clustering aspect of it as part of the next phase.
Yes.
I was kind of curious how you're getting around the fact that, you know, that you can get sick a number of hours after they have, like, sort of the incident that might have caused the gastrointestinal. Well, like, I know you're part of the purpose of that clustering would be to identify potentially restaurants or venues that were potentially the cause of some of these issues. I wasn't sure. I might have said to you guys.
Sure. Well, so for restaurants, I think we're looking more at, like, the actual tweet text. So we see a lot of, I'm throwing up a hamburger that I had at McDonald's last night kind of tweets. But when looking at the health district level, the clustering can just provide a really good indication of that community level.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you for attending.